This episode contains mentions of suicide. If you or someone you know is struggling with PTSD or suicidal thoughts, please reach out. The Veterans Crisis Line is available 24/7. Just dial 988 and then press 1. Or send a text message to 838-255. That's 838-255.
I walked into the house. I gave my mom a hug and my dad was standing there. And I told him Brady had shot himself.
And right there, it's like it clicked.
I have never seen a more dead stare in my dad's eyes.
That's Brad Dunham describing the moment that changed everything between him and his father. Brad's a history teacher from Minnesota. His dad, Warren, is a Vietnam veteran who came home in 1969 and barely spoke about the war for decades. Brad's brother-in-law, Brady, fought in Afghanistan and, tragically, took his own life at the age of 25.
Like I said, it clicked because I had that sense of feeling like, oh shit, he's been there and never went through with it.
As we draw near the end of National PTSD Awareness Month, we'll find out how Brady's death became a bridge between Brad and Warren, and how the work of healing trauma never really ends, but it can be paid forward. Stick around. From the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, founders of The Wall, this is Echoes of the Vietnam War. I'm your host, Michael Crone, bringing you stories of service, sacrifice, and healing from people who still feel the impact of that conflict more than 50 years later. Episode 99, The Dead Stare, right after this.
Hello, I'm Gary Sinise. Nearly 3 million Americans served in Vietnam, and more than 58,000 have their names inscribed on the wall. Those that pay the ultimate price in service to America. Some might ask why the Vietnam War still matters. It matters because more than 58,000 lives were cut short and their families forever changed. It matters because we should never forget how Vietnam veterans were treated when they came home. A lesson learned so that our current generation of veterans are treated with respect. The Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund, the organization that built the wall, works to ensure that future generations will understand the war's impact. I'm asking you to help keep the promise the wall was built on. Never forget. Visit vvmf.org to find out how you can get involved.
Bradley Dunham. I live up in northwestern Minnesota in a little town called Yulin. Population 300-ish. Live out in the country. I am a history teacher. Just got finished with my 18th year of teaching. I have a master's in history, so I also teach online college classes. But I live here with my wife, Tracy, and my daughter, Maya, and my son, Skyler.
When you think about your childhood, and particularly your relationship with your father and his relationship with your mother, what are some memories that stand out to you as sort of defining of those relationships?
thinking back now, one thing to get through things was to constantly stay busy. You know, and on a dairy farm, you are constantly busy. Always out in the barn, doing chores, never went on family vacations. You know, it wasn't until I got to be in junior high and high school when I really started to see there was times when it was me and my brother and my mom doing the chores. Dad had gone and, you know, with like a lot of Vietnam vets, they hit the bar. I was 10th or 11th grade when I really started noticing it. And, you know, lo and behold, next morning, Dad was home and then he was out. He'd get up and he'd go milk cows, you know, so constantly being busy. My dad definitely instilled in me a work ethic.
Did you feel close to your father?
No, I was a lot closer to my mom. Definitely a lot closer with my mom than I was my dad.
Yeah. And do you remember at the time giving any thought to the distance between you and your father? And or did it just feel normal? Like this is just my circumstance.
This is normal. I give my mom and dad a little grief right now because I go, you go to more of the grandkids' games than you ever went to mine. Well, honestly, they're not
dairy farmers anymore, so that helps.
Yep, absolutely. I honestly don't know if my dad ever came to any of my high school basketball games.
Yeah.
Milking cows, whatever it was, you know, maybe made a few football games. But yeah, mom would be at some, but it was just, yeah, it was that.
They had shit to do.
Yeah, they did.
Do you remember him talking very much at all about his experience in Vietnam?
No. Growing up, my dad never talked about it. When I became a history teacher, you know, he started to do more. But his big jump was, I want to say, early 2000s. And it was in the winter. And he got a call. And it was the people from his unit that do the reunions. And they talked, they sent him stuff. And my mom and dad went to his first reunion. And it kind of after that is when then he started wearing Vietnam hats. And then he started talking about it. And I was, you know, I felt a little more comfortable teaching history, talking to him about it. But now that is like a total 360 change from growing up, not talking about it, not worrying, not being proud of it at all. And now he's totally proud of it.
Mm. Tell me about Brady Oberg. Tell us who he was and a little bit about his story.
I'm married to his sister. But
oh, you're married to Brady's sister.
Correct. Tracy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. And this and that relationship didn't start right away, but We hung out for years. We all had horses. We went to horse events. We had a trailer. They didn't have a trailer. So we would always pick them and their horses up. And we were going to things every weekend, you know. And Brady was younger than Tracy and her brother, Brad. So I knew Tracy 10 years before we even thought about dating and all of that stuff. I actually had Brady, I student taught in UWIM where I'm teaching now. And I had Brady as a student and he played basketball for me. But at that point I was dating his sister and just a great relationship with Brady. And he graduated high school and he went off to the military. 10th Mountain Division, 4th Brigade.
What year would that have been, roughly?
He joined, he was active infantry in 2009.
Yeah. And for those of us who either don't know or don't remember our history, remind us what was going on in 2009.
Well,
I mean, we were involved at that point.
The war in Afghanistan was definitely something that he wanted to be involved in. So he was deployed to Afghanistan and did a year tour over there.
And do you remember what year he was sent there?
2009.
Yep. Okay. So right away.
Yep.
Pretty much right away. Yeah.
Yep. Because that was, my wife talks about this, is like, his mom and dad, my mother and father-in-law were trying, like, hey, maybe you could be in the band or something like that. And he says, I didn't train to be sitting on the sideline. And that's the kind of kid Brady was. He didn't want to train to sit on the sideline. He said, he wanted active duty.
What do you know about his experiences with the 10th Mountain Division in Afghanistan?
So Brady was a sniper. And I know, talking to some of the guys that he served with, that Brady got those guys out of some jams. As we were going through a trunk of Brady's stuff, there was a set of car keys, and Brady's wife, Katie, never could figure out what these car keys were. It was a car that they never owned. And then one of the guys that served with Brady was visiting, and they were going through the trunk, and he knew these car keys. These were Brady's first sniper kill. So him and this guy took this insurgent out and put the guy back in the car, took the car keys, and shoved the car over the cliff. That's what I was told. And looking back now, being a sniper, there's a lot of struggle there that Brady had. Faith-wise, growing up, thou shalt not kill. Well, when you're put into the military side of things, I know he struggled with that some. My wife, and like I said, we're finding out a lot of these stories after the fact. You know, I, like every veteran, they didn't talk about a whole lot of it, or didn't want us to know about it.
Sure. When Brady came home from Afghanistan, first of all, did he stay in the military? And secondly, what changes did you notice in him? Because you knew him very, very well.
Yeah. You know what? He did not stay. He finished his tour. He was done. Came home, got married, and then his knees were bad. His back was bad. And he couldn't do it anymore. And so he started going to school and was going to start getting into, him and this guy he served with had this passion for guns, and him and Brady actually started a business. They were making guns, and they were selling and reloading ammunition and doing that. Brady was working at a gun range.
What changes, if any, did you notice in Brady when he came home from Afghanistan?
There was like just a little more that uneasiness, and not that he was moody, but just that uneasiness of things. And I know he was having visions and nightmares and stuff like that.
Tell me where you were when you got the news about Brady.
I was in my bed. So we had gone to bed, and Brady was living in Detroit Lakes. And that was the same weekend as we have a big country music festival called Lee Fest. And so Lee Fest was going on, and Brady went. So he was there with his cousin, and somewhere between the drive home from Wee Fest to where he was living, there was a half hour of insanity. Because he got home and he called Katie, his wife,
and I don't know the conversation. And she called police to have them go check on him. And by that point, he was already gone. But Tracy and I were in bed. My phone wasn't on silent. It was on, but it wouldn't alert me unless they called three times. So my phone rang, but never rang.
I got it. Yeah.
Which I wish because Tracy's mom and dad tried to call me first before they called her. And I wish I would have gotten the phone call and not her. This was 11:30-ish on August 6th that we were laying there in bed. And then it kind of just went all helter-skelter from there.
Yeah. Obviously, this devastated everyone in the family and probably the community. Yep. But there was a particular thing that happened between you and your father the first time that the two of you were in a room together after Brady's suicide. Can you talk about that?
Yep. So we went, after we got the call, we went to Tracy's mom and dad's right away, trying to sort things out. And come morning, I went home. On the way home, I called my brother, told him. My sister already knew, but I stopped by to tell my mom and dad. And it was early. And I walked into the house. I gave my mom a hug and my dad was standing there. And I told him Brady had shot himself.
And right there, it's like it clicked.
I have never seen a more dead stare in my dad's eyes. Like I said, it clicked because, and I don't know this for sure, but I had that sense of feeling like, oh shit, he's been there and never went through with it. And after that, it's been a whole different, all the drinking and all of what he went through, it all made perfect sense. And it seemed like I understood it after that. And that week we got ready for the funeral, and we were harvesting. And I went out just to check on him. He was in the field, and he goes, I don't know if I can go to the funeral, Brad. I said, that's fine, Dad. It really hit him. So he was there supportive, but yeah, that definitely was a change for me. And the relationship, and that kind of helped me feel more comfortable asking him about things, because, you know, he's probably been in one of those dark positions and dark spots in his life, and definitely opened up our relationship.
Brad began traveling with his father to Vietnam veterans' reunions.
My wife and I went to him and with my mom to Gettysburg. And at every one of these, on the last day or one of the days, they do a memorial for all the men that didn't make it home in the 2nd Squad, 1st Cav. And then anybody that has passed away recently. And I'm sitting there next to him and pulls out the roster and he's looking through the names and he points to a name, and it was Donald Ray Webb. And he said, he was in the truck in front of me. He got shot. I didn't. They were the same age. I think Donald had just, he was 3 days past his birthday when he was shot, but it was, he is somebody that we have always found on the wall. When we were just recently at the wall on the honor flight, somebody came up and said, was he a family member or whatever? And my dad's sobbing. And he's like, no, he was in the truck in front of me. And he goes, that's the closest I came to dying that day.
After a short break, we'll hear a little bit of the audio from Brad's conversations with his father. Stick around. Let's talk about the wall for a minute. It is widely considered to be the memorial that changed memorials forever. Its design invites a level of engagement, of introspection, of reverence that no fountain, no statue of a cannon or a man on a horse could ever match. The volunteers who work there often talk about wall magic, that unexpected, often spiritual connection or discovery that happens when you visit the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. It's one of the reasons why the wall's design has inspired so many other memorials around the world. Of course, there is one little problem with the wall's design. 140 panels of polished black granite aren't exactly portable. So, unless you can get yourself to Washington, D.C., how are you supposed to experience wall magic for yourself? Well, guess what? We already thought of that. In 1996, VVMF unveiled an exact replica of the wall that could be packed into an 18-wheeler and hauled to cities and towns all across America. Since then, the wall that heals has been displayed in more than 800 communities throughout the nation, spreading the healing legacy of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial to millions of visitors. Sure, there are other versions of the wall that travel around the country, but the wall that heals is the only one that is an exact replica of the one in Washington, created and maintained by the same organization that built the wall in the first place. And not only that, the wall that heals is accompanied and curated by VVMF employees who work with host communities to ensure that the experience is as close as possible to the real thing. And that includes wall magic. But you don't have to take my word for it. You can check out episode 15 of this podcast to learn what happens to people's hearts when this traveling exhibit rolls into a real-life American community. The Wall That Heals and the Mobile Education Center that travels with it will be in Claremont, New Hampshire, June 26 through 29, and Farmington, Maine, July 3 through 6. To see the rest of this year's tour schedule and to learn how you can bring the Wall That Heals to your town, visit vvmf.org. If you're enjoying Echoes of the Vietnam War, I want to let you know about some very easy ways you can help to support the podcast. Here are three ideas ranked from easiest to hardest, and the hardest is still pretty easy. Number one, spread the word. Tell a friend or two friends, or better yet, share a favorite episode on your social media accounts so you can let all of your friends know in one go. Number two, leave us a review or a rating wherever you get your podcasts. Even if you stream Echoes directly from our website, you can still send feedback through the form at the bottom of the page. Number three, if you're listening from our website, consider following or subscribing on one of the many platforms where podcasts are found, including Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and many more. That way, you'll always have the most recent episode automatically downloaded to your mobile device, and you'll boost our subscription numbers, which will help new listeners find us more easily. Thank you so much for just listening. We really appreciate your continued attention to these stories.
We'll be extra grateful for your help in spreading the word about Echoes so more people can check out the work we're doing. Brad told me that he's been a regular listener to Echoes, and he was particularly inspired by episode 83, Just Listen. He called me up and asked a few questions about recording gear and interview techniques, but it wasn't long before he was recording conversations with his father, Warren, about his experiences in Vietnam. Here's a little bit of audio from those conversations.
Warren, Dom, I was drafted in February of 68. I reported to Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. They put us on a bus, took us to Morehead Armory, but we had our physical. Got on a plane, same day, ended up in Fort Lewis, Washington. They tell you to go out here and load stuff on the truck, and then you come back in and you put fuel on it. And where are we going? Oh, we're going to go north tomorrow. So you got your truck driver, and you got your shotgun. And you all go get lined up in a convoy. And then the tanks and the PCs and the choppers come, and then we started going.
And they escort you there?
They escort us.
Okay.
If we got hit, they said, you guys keep going.
Okay.
And
so the truck you drove, that didn't have a gun on it, but there was one.
We had M60s.
Okay.
That's all we had was two M60s.
Okay. But some of those trucks that were, so the tanks would lead you. And there was gunner trucks and helicopters.
No, we didn't have any gunner trucks.
Okay.
No, it was just, we just had M16s and the tanks and the PCs were the guns.
Okay.
Yeah, and the chopper.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they did that every time? Escort?
Every time, up and back.
Up and back, okay.
And the officer said, we're supposed to drive at 25 miles an hour. Well, that didn't happen.
You had to drive faster than 25 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the tanks were going faster than 25 miles an hour.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Some days you haul fuel, some days you haul food. Some days you haul ammo. Fuel truck wasn't a good thing to do.
No. Couldn't imagine that.
Yeah, it was.
And because none of that was, I mean, that was, looking at these trucks, that was wide open. All you had to do was put a bullet.
Not that high. You know, and the bladder set up this high.
Yeah.
I mean, we had 5,000 gallons in there, you know.
Did then any of those ever get hit?
Oh, yeah.
Blow the whole truck up?
Well, it'll spring a leak, you know.
Oh, but a bullet wouldn't
make it. Unless it sparked.
Oh.
Yeah, the worst wreck we ever had was one night when the PCs were on guard duty and they had the back open. It was kind of like an gate, you know. And the guy on guard duty fell asleep and the gooks come up and threw a satchel charge inside and killed them all.
That's why you didn't want to fall asleep. So when you did guard duty, there was three of you out there?
Yep, three guards.
Two slept, one guarded.
Well, if we were on high alert, two guarded and one slept.
Okay.
Yep. And we had conscientious objectors. Didn't believe in guns. Well, I got him one night. The other guy was paranoid of him anyway. And I said, well, you're going to pull guard duty, two of us. He said, I don't hold a gun. Well, I said, the first bullet that goes off, if you don't have that gun in your hand, you're dead. He sat at that 60 all night. He didn't even take a nap.
So when you were north, were you only set to be there for so long and then they moved you out?
Well, they never know.
Okay.
I was in Pleiku for a year.
Oh, okay.
And then my extension, I went south. I sat in an office down there. Oh. I didn't have to go out anymore. So that's why I spent 15 months instead of 12.
Okay.
But I just did the ordering ammo for the, I ordered the whole squadron. Every once in a while, they'd say, you better go out and check and see if they're hoarding. Yeah, okay. So I catch the first chopper going out, and if it was full, I crawl in back with the door gunner and sit back there, and we go to A troop or B troop or wherever the hell he's going. Mm-hmm. I'd go into inventory there. You know, I get out there, and the guy said, what are you doing? Oh, they sent me out to inventory this shit. Well, you ain't going to report this. Hell no, you're short of everything, I said. I can already see it.
Brad and Warren recently took a trip to Washington, D.C. with Honor Flight. After visiting the wall, Brad asked Warren to talk a little bit about Donald Webb, whose name they had just visited at Panel 41 West, Line 55.
Well, we're on our way to Don K and Doc Toll. We had ammunition and fuel on. Every time we went, we had the tanks, PCs, choppers with us. And they said, if we get hit, you guys keep going, we'll take care of it. So some of us make it, and some of us didn't. So I was just one of the lucky ones that got up there and got back that day. I lost a lot of friends, and there's a lot of my friends on that wall. But Donald was the closest I ever come to being shot, so he's pretty special.
Yeah, he's on panel 41W, line 55. A guy that I've never met, but definitely have utmost great respect for.
Ten years ago, Brad and Tracy, with the help of some of Brady's Army buddies, launched the Brady Oberg Legacy Foundation.
This is the 10th anniversary, so 2015. We had a lot of Brady's guys that he served with were at the funeral, and we thought, okay, what if we get these guys together? So we got them together, and they visited, and then from there, it's like, what if we do this more often? And one thing that always comes out is, Tracy asked him once at a bonfire we were having, it's like, well, what do you want to do? He says, I don't know what I want to do, but I want to do something bigger and better than myself. And that's been the driving behind us doing the foundation. Let's do something bigger and better than himself. And I tell people all the time, I wish the foundation never existed. But all the good things we've done with it, we bring veterans together. We do retreats. We do awareness for people to show signs of PTSD. What can you do? And we bring veterans in. We take them fishing. I do deer hunts. I do turkey hunts. And we get, and all of these events, it's really not the added stuff of the fishing and hunting. That's just extra. It's being able to get these guys together and talking. And Tracy's had two. You know, our mission is, okay, let's save one. Now we're going to go save another. Tracy said it happened to her twice that two guys have come up and said, okay, I'm your one. Now go get another one.
Meaning so, that she saved their lives?
Yeah, our foundation saved their life. Yeah. And one of the guys that I've had him on three retreats of mine. He came to a fall retreat. He came to my muzzleloader black powder deer hunt. And then the spring he came to my turkey hunt. And I sat with him and I said, you changed. He said, you guys have changed me. Your organization has changed me. And he's in a lot more positive spot than he was 3 years ago when he first started coming to events.
Do those guys react to you
differently because you weren't there? Because you can't possibly understand?
I don't try to fix it. The only way I fix it is I'll ask a question and I just let them talk.
Gotcha. So you're not asking them to talk to you. You're asking them to talk to each other.
Yes. Yes. And I purposely put two veterans together in a deer stand or in a turkey blind or in a boat. There's three of you. The guide is just there. He's going to help you fish. You guys talk. That's the ultimate goal, is to get them to talk and know that they have, there's people to talk to, and there's the camaraderie of, oh, these guys have been through this shit. Okay.
As you look forward, do you have any picture in your mind of where you'd like the foundation to be 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
We have one thing that this was one thing we've started. It wasn't right away, but it's been in the last 5 years, and we want to continue to grow. We sponsor a scholarship for anybody military that wants to go into counseling. Brady went to a counselor, and then all of a sudden he quit going. He's like, I don't want to go talk to somebody that's never been there and has no idea what I'm going through. So that's now sparked us to have anybody former military that knows what these guys go through, we help sponsor them of the scholarship to get their degree to become counselor.
What a great idea.
So we have a few colleges we're in with. I know we've had one graduate with their degree. Like I said, this is year 10. We're trying to do 10 different retreats this year with getting veterans together. Hopefully it'll be more. And I'm taking your role, Michael. I've started a podcast. I sit in a turkey blind. I sit in a deer stand. I sit in a fishing boat with all of these guys in our own house listening to veterans. I hear, just as you do, I hear amazing stories. And I can't tell them very well. So I have now started a podcast interviewing and getting these, just as you do, these veterans and anybody, you know, related to tell their story.
What's the name of the podcast?
Brady Oberg Legacy Podcast.
Brad and Warren still travel together to Vietnam veterans' reunions, and they still record conversations about a war that ended before Brad was born, but whose echoes shaped his entire childhood. This August, on the anniversary of Brady's death, the family will lay a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier at Arlington National Cemetery. The foundation keeps growing, one veteran at a time, one conversation at a time. Because sometimes the most important thing isn't fixing someone's pain. It's simply being willing to sit with them while they carry it. You can learn more about the Brady Oberg Legacy Foundation at BradyObergLegacyFoundation.org. And again, if you or someone you know is struggling with PTSD or suicidal thoughts, reach out. The Veterans Crisis Line is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 988. We'll be back in 2 weeks with more stories of service, sacrifice, and healing. See you then.